from the clubhouse to the tailgates and beyond.
Fly ball, deep left, gone!
Welcome to Brewers Weekly. Here's your host, Dominic Catronio.
Hello, hello, hello. Welcome in Brewers Weekly off day edition. Busy day for me, but if you're watching live on YouTube, hey, it's Friday morning, the off day's over. Get ready for the Yankees tonight. We'll talk about them at the very end of the program of what to expect. Here in the rundown to open things up on Brewers Weekly, a reminder, if you're listening on WTMJ live here on Thursday night, this is tape program now, so catch it on YouTube first thing Friday in the morning. But these are always podcasted as well, and they work still in audio form, but we're adding some bells and whistles over on the video side. Number one, pitching staff's on fire. We got to talk about the pitching staff, and I think sometimes we get enamored with win-loss records for the team, and that gives us our perception of how the pitching staff is doing. I'll explain why it's way better than you realize. We got to talk about Bryce Turang. Is he legitimately going to be an MVP candidate? Can he finish top 10 in MVP? Can he be the National League's starting second baseman for the All-Star game in Philadelphia? That's going to be a fun discussion. A very loud discussion on social media, but it's going to be a discussion. We are going to overreact to Jackson Chourio's first two games of the season because I saw some signs. I saw some different approaches from Chourio that I'm very, 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 very excited about. And that will lead us into our final segment and previewing the Yankee series and also just an exercise of sitting down and thinking about, you know, now that Yelich is out, not for much longer, but Yelich is still out for another week or two, what is the best lineup that the Brewers can put out there right now? And what will be the conflict when Yelich returns of how does he fit back onto the roster whenever that day does come? So that's your rundown for today's show. A reminder, Brewers All Access is the name of the podcast. That's where all of the postgame shows get uploaded as well. We'll have shows after every game this weekend against the New York Yankees. But this pitching staff is going to be really tested against maybe the best offense in baseball this weekend with New York. More on them later. But this weekend, it'll be Jacob Mizorowski on Friday, thanks to the rain out in St. Louis. Kyle Harrison on Saturday, and Logan Henderson on Sunday. So a lot of youth, a lot of sophomores and rookies, if you will, sophomores and freshmen getting the starts against the Bronx Bombers. Whew, they're going to find out what they're made of real fast. But I just had a list of stats and a list of performances here that we need to point out about the Brewers pitching staff, both starting and relieving. And I just want to start with the relievers because it's a little easier to get through them. Now that we know Angel Serpa's season is over, he is getting Tommy John surgery. Who is going to be the lefty that steps up while Jared Koenig is on the injured list? And he's playing catch, but we'll get an update this weekend from him on how he's feeling from his elbow sprain. That lefty that's stepping up is DL Hall. And you may recall a couple of episodes ago on Brewers Weekly, we were pointing out about how excited we were for the changeup and how DL's made some serious changes to his arsenal. And we're starting to see it pay off. A sub-2 ERA. Yes, the walk rate is very high right now for DL Hall, but he is going to be that leverage lefty for the time being, in my opinion, given it's what the Brewers need. We've seen the fastball tick up to 96. He's even touched 97. And to see that velo come back was not expected, but it's certainly a welcome sight to have Hall as a multi-inning weapon or as a matchup weapon. And I think the biggest, most important thing about DL Hall that I think we underrated about his season last year, given how much he was dealing with injury and he was up and down and, you know, didn't really know what to expect out of DL last season. He sneaky gets righties out, and we talked about that in that previous Brewers Weekly. One of the superpowers to be a left-hander in the bullpen is if you're able to get right-handed hitters out. And yes, lefties struggle against him. Very quietly last year, he held right-handed hitters to a sub-600 OPS. He did not allow a single homer to a right-handed hitter all season last year. Now, he's allowed one so far this year. That was on a hanging changeup in Miami. But this year, righties are hitting 171 against them with, once again, a 578 OPS. That's significant as a lefty who you're going to see pinch hitters, you're going to see righties come in when you're facing that window of lefties. And if he continues to show off the tools like that changeup, like this cutter that he has going in on righties, man, like what a development story it has been for DL Hall, and he's still got three more years of control. I mean, there's still so much the Brewers can do with DL in this bullpen, him and Aaron Ashby as your dynamic lefties in the bullpen. Sign me up for that. That is tremendous. How about the leverage guys, Trevor Megill and Abner Uribe. They've looked more like themselves. I know they allowed a run each in the finale against St. Louis. Look, that was a non-save situation. They hadn't pitched in a couple of days. A little bit of rust. That adrenaline is so different in a non-save situation versus a regular situation. So I give them the benefit of the doubt on that one. But when it comes to having both McGill and Uribe, a great piece over in The Athletic, talking about how it's an all-time high right now for how many different pitchers have registered a save so far this season. No, not many teams have a Mason Miller they can hand the ball to. Not many teams have a lockdown, bona fide closer that say, you have the ninth in the ninth inning only. And the Brewers maybe thought they had that coming into the season with Trevor McGill before his struggles and the slow start that he had. But in all honesty, the trajectory that Trevor McGill is on right now, the velo's 97, 98. He can live with that if he's commanding it. And the curveball is starting to look better and better under the hood, right? I saw some negative sixes and some negative sevens on his induced vertical break, which is where he wants to live with his curveball. He's not trying to make it the nastiest, biggest thing on the planet, but he has that such high release point, and it tries to bring it down vertically. To have the under-the-hood numbers start to match up with performance is what I'm really excited about for Trevor McGill. Uribe still needs to get into better counts, but he is getting more ground balls. He's getting a little bit more swing and miss on the slider. The command has not quite been there so far for the slider. But again, to see them both get back on track is going to be vital for this bullpen moving forward. And as a whole, this pitching staff has been on fire. Now, during that six-game losing streak, it wasn't necessarily the pitching staff's fault, but there were some injuries they were dealing with. There were some bullpen blow-ups in there, too. But since the end of that six-game losing streak, this is the entire pitching staff, mind you, April 15th is the date of demarcation right now for the pitching staff. The Brewers have the best ERA in the National League and top three in baseball. They have a sub-3 ERA for the last 3.5 weeks, 2.94, and yet the team is 11-8 over this time. Look, if you're carrying a sub-3 ERA with the lineup that it looks like right now and when Yelich does return, that's going to be a 90-plus win team trajectory. Now, you're not going to maintain a sub-3 ERA for the entire season, but to see, despite an 11-8 record, a 2.94 ERA, the second-best strikeout rate in the National League in that time, too, striking out a quarter of their batters. They have the best fielding independent pitching, FIP, which is a numbers-based stat that is just about what the pitcher can control, right? So that's just strikeouts, walks, home runs. Sneaky, and I hope I'm not jinxing it with the Yankees coming to town this weekend, but the Brewers don't give up a lot of home runs as a pitching staff. That's some serious stuff that maybe gets overlooked where we get so used to success and we get so used to run scoring. Think about how many runs that have scored against the Brewers that are just from sustained rallies or from bloop hits or whatever it may be, because very quietly, I don't think any of us realize just how great the Brewers have been at limiting homers per nine. They have the second lowest homers per nine as a staff allowed the entire season, not just during the stretch that we're talking about. The only team lower is the Pittsburgh Pirates, which I think wouldn't surprise anybody given the ballpark they play in and the pitching staff that they employ. The last couple of notes that I wanted to point out on this pitching staff, Jacob Mizorowski. Again, he gets the ball on Friday. Are we watching a Cy Young candidate here? And it's still very early, obviously, to talk about awards. It's May, for goodness sake. He's got a sub-3 ERA, a sub-3 FIP. It's still early. He's probably going to lead the National League in strikeouts. It's been dancing around with him and Christopher Sanchez, depending on whose start comes up next. Sanchez is generally getting the start a day before Miz right now. And let's say he leads the National League in strikeouts, and he makes 30 starts, and he has a sub-3.5 ERA, and he's a qualified pitcher. I mean, there's a very good chance we're talking top five in Cy Young for Jacob Mizorowski in his first full season in the show. That's some real rare air that we do have to monitor for Miz moving forward. And the quote from Aaron Ashby sticks with me. I've said it pretty much every time I can think about it, because Ash is absolutely right that Miz has the stuff every night to throw a no-hitter. And when he gets the walks under control, when he's throwing sliders the way he did against the Nats last weekend, my goodness, it looks untouchable. Now, the slider really behaves like a cutter. And I know he calls it a slider. I know everyone calls it a slider. Oh, my God, it's a 97-mile-an-hour slider. It's a cutter. It's moving like a cutter. But whatever. You throw it, you name it. It's a nasty pitch. It's been working great. Both breaking balls, really, have been working great for Miz. And then just for kicks and giggles, on Friday night against the Nats, he decided to drop a changeup in that game. And just was disgusting. He threw one changeup. He got one swing and miss. It's his third strikeout of the year on the changeup. But on pitches that aren't fastballs going into Friday, the numbers are mind-blowing. Opponents, again, on non-fastballs are just 6 for 57. I will say that number again. 6 for 57 against non-fastballs. That is a 105 average. The whiff rate is well over 30% of the time on all those pitches. Whew, I mean, I again, sky's the limit for Miz. You know that. How about Kyle Harrison, man? As a lefty, he's had to miss a start, so his numbers are a little lower in the counting stats than everybody else. Only 29 innings so far this year because of the wrist bang-up and then was shortened on his way out. But to have a 29% strikeout rate as a lefty, that's extremely rare. To have a 2.12 ERA and a sub-1 a whip, also extremely rare for a lefty. I know people like to dunk on the Red Sox right now on social media for the trade. Like, oh my God, they did it again. Why didn't Craig Breslow hang up? I still don't know why Craig Breslow didn't hang up, because Kyle Harrison is the centerpiece of that deal. And Shane Drouin's in the big leagues right now and pitching very, very well. I haven't even mentioned Drouin rolling in. Or even you could talk about the depth they have with Robert Gasser and Coleman Crow. I haven't even had to mention Brandon Woodruff draining fluid from his shoulder while he's on the injured list. Quinn Priester being pulled off his rehab assignment. I mean, maybe a year ago, it'd be another injury to the pile. But now the Brewers are 100% relying on the young guys, right? No one in this starting rotation has a full 2 years of service time yet. Now, if you guys will surpass 2 years of service time during this season, how wild is that? That the Brewers have one of the best pitching staffs in baseball with all young guys, all under team control for multiple years. And the guys that they thought that were bringing back, quote-unquote, veterans, are on the injured list right now. Kudos to Matt Arnold. Kudos to Chris Hook, to Jim Henderson, to Juan Sandoval, to everybody involved in the Brewers pitching department, because they have earned it so far this season. Let's take a breather. Let's shift over to the offense. Let's give some more awards out in May. Why not? Let's talk about Bryce Durang coming up after the break.
Brewers Weekly on WTMJ. Brewers Weekly on WTMJ.
Let's get happy. Let's talk about Durang. We've talked about him plenty so far this season. Welcome back, Brewers Weekly. If you're listening live on WTMJ, we're taped, but don't worry. You can catch it in podcast form. Brewers All Access, wherever you get your podcasts, and also on ESPN Milwaukee's YouTube page, where maybe you're watching us right now. So without further ado, let's go ahead and switch things over to the StatCast version, to the Baseball Savant view of Bryce Durang. And let's just do a Baseball Savant tour and talk about, honestly, could Bryce Durang be an MVP candidate for the National League? Again, this is kind of suspending reality, knowing, look, Shohei's probably going to win it. Okay, even if Shohei has a league average year as a hitter and then also is top five in Cy Young, which he's currently on pace to do, he's going to win MVP. But let's just suspend reality for a second. How could Bryce Durang win MVP? Let's just start over here at his slash line, okay? Right now, he is the only qualified National Leaguer with a 3.45, meaning a 300 batting average, a 400 on base, and a 500 slugging. If that lasts the whole year as a second baseman, that would be extremely rare air. Granted, he's got very slim margins with the batting average and with the slugging percentage, but we'll see. One of the things that maybe could be a little bit more realistic, something that could be within his realm, is a 2020 season. He came close last year with 18 homers, and 12 of them were after August 1st, mind you. That stolen base is already being up. It's hard to run when everyone knows you're going to run. But to have a season where Bryce Durang hits 300 and goes 2020, the last second baseman to do that combination, hit at least 300 and go 2020, was Jose Altuve when he won the MVP in 2017. Now I know what you're thinking. Wait, Dom. That's the sign-stealing year. Why would you want to be associated with that? Look, Altuve wasn't involved with the sign-stealing, with the trash can scheme, and that sort of thing. Altuve was certainly a top three MVP. You could argue it could have been Judge that year. I'm all in on listening to that. It's also worth reminding you, Altuve won the batting title that year. He hit over 340 for that season. I don't see that happening for Bryce Durang, but it's something to easily compare and maybe shoot for and understand, like, could that be in the realm of possibilities? When we go back to a Savant page here, you obviously are blasted with red, like it's Kramer and Seinfeld, right, with the chicken sign. You know, maybe more experienced fans will know what I'm talking about there. If you're not, go watch Seinfeld on Netflix or something. But what I love about this page and what I love about Bryce is, even with that bat speed number being at 71 miles per hour and being technically slightly below league average, his approach is so different than most batters with elite bat speed that also generate this much red on their Savant profile, is that we've talked about it before on this channel. He lets the ball travel. He has such an aggressive opposite field approach like you see over here in his spray chart. Not many lefties are able to do what he does. Now, James Wood's the freak that we all think about, but James Wood is also 6'5" and has natural leverage. Slim, as he's affectionately known in the clubhouse, is all 6'190". That's a different amount of leverage to be going backside with, yes, more added muscle onto Bryce, but it's been super impressive to watch him generate this much power and this much quality of contact as a second baseman. I think the stat I love most about all of this is his walk rate. To be in the top of the top when it comes to walk rate, 20% walk rate. Now, that's not sustainable. That's not going to last the entire season. But if he's double league average walk rate is usually right around 9%. To be at 20, I mean, goodness gracious, that's pretty impressive for Bryce to understand. Could he become a guy that has more walks than strikeouts by the end of the year? Yes, his strikeout rate is league average, but that's all you're asking for. You're asking for his strikeout rate to be league average and everything else to be damage or a walk? That is a super, super dangerous player. I don't want to lose you with ex-WOBA or average exit velo. This stuff is important to me, but for the sake of the argument, you see he's in the 98th percentile. He's doing something well there. The defense continues to trend upward, which we all know. He's already got platinum on that glove for a reason, right? But to already be at two outs above average is exciting to see that the defense is continuing to improve. Nico Horner is one of the best defenders I've ever seen at second base. I saw him in college. It's going to be a hard race at second base right now. And what Luis Arraez is doing with Ron Washington in San Francisco should not be ignored either. But when we look at specifically what is working for Bryce Terang here, why is he hitting the ball so well? Look at him against breaking balls. This is actually kind of shocking that he's hitting over 400 against spin this year. And he's only seeing it about 25% of the time. He still sees a lot of heaters. And year over year, I'll show you how much he's improved on the heater. But two homers, yes, just one double. A whiff rate of only 22% on breaking balls is very impressive for a left-handed hitter, given how many righties he sees on a weekly basis. The slug at 611 is really nuts. Now, the X-slug goes down to still over 500 for his X-slug. I just sit here and I see the quality of contact. Seems like every ball is hit hard right now for Bryce, while he also has the discipline to stay in counts, because you look at, we talk about the lack of pulling the ball in the air, and the nerds, sometimes like me, would tell you you need to pull the ball to have success. Bryce is proving you don't necessarily always have to pull the ball in the air to be successful in the game. You need to make sure you avoid too many ground balls. He's right on league average with ground balls, and he has the speed to beat out ground ball base hits. And on top of all of that, the discipline continues to shine. Zone contact is up year over year, and he's doing more damage when he makes contact in the zone. His chase rate is down year over year from 24% last year to 21% this year. Again, very early sample size. He's become a little bit more aggressive early in counts this year. 24% first pitch last year, 31% this year. And he's just simply swinging and missing less and flat out swinging slightly less. He's being more selective. He's drawing more walks. And when you want to get into the minutiae, you want to get into the really nerdy stuff when we talk about run value, whenever you talk to a nerd like me, whenever you talk to analytics guys, everything is based off of runs, right? Think of it like in football, when we talk about yards, and we talk about yards per carry and quarterback rating and that sort of thing. It's all based off yards in football. So baseball, everything's based off runs. And to go from what was graded by the advanced analytics as the first percentile worst qualified hitter in baseball by run value in 2023 to now a 96th percentile run value hitter in 2026 in 4 years is outstanding. It is a development project that cannot be lost, and you can see the bat speed moving up drastically, adding strength, the hard hit rate going up in tandem with the bat speed going up, the chase rate getting better as the seasons go on. I just love this profile, man. I think this is a tremendous player. This is certainly an MVP candidate and something that we really need to talk about that legitimately could be the starting second baseman for the National League in the All-Star game in Philadelphia. Now, that brings up the natural, easy question of let's go to baseball reference. Let's go ahead and do it. Let's see Bryce Terang versus Nico Hoerner to this point in the year. Now, mind you, this is not going to include Nico playing in the finale against the Reds today, that the Cubs finished off the sweep today against Cincinnati. But I'm just warning you right now, reminder, hey, Cubs have more fans than Brewers. It's just a fact. Now, Bryce on Team USA, maybe that helps. Maybe we see some alliances come with some of his Team USA teammates, like Aaron Judge this week. But when I pull up now the comparison of stat on Stathead of Nico Hoerner versus Bryce Terang, and I know you see all that green on the right where he's leading in slash line, and Nico is not necessarily a power hitter, but Nico leads everything that isn't having to do with power or rate stats or that sort of thing, right? Their WAR is virtually equal because of Nico's value defensively is still that much a little bit better than Bryce's so far this season. Nico has just physically more hits, despite playing four more games, mind you. Remember, Bryce had a little ankle issue and he had an illness. But they're equal in stolen bases. They're within 15 points of each other on batting average. But then Bryce really separates himself in on-base slugging and OPS, and thus OPS+. But I'm just preparing Brewers fans right now for the vitriol and for the animosity and for the anger that's going to come during this voting process. Because let's be very, very clear. Both Nico Hoerner and Bryce Terang are all-star caliber second basemen. Both of them could be a starter and nobody would bat an eye. I'm telling you that right now with whatever way it goes. Do not let Cub fans get mad at me. I think Nico Hoerner is a fabulous player. I also think Bryce Terang is a fabulous player. This is truly, there are no wrong answers with Hoerner and Terang. And if you're yelling, Dom, look at that slash line. Look at the homers. Look at what everything else Bryce does for his team. Yeah, that's why my vote would be Bryce Terang, but it's only May 7th. Voting doesn't even open up until what, first week of June? So be prepared for when that all-star voting comes, because Brewers fans are going to have to make their voices heard as loud as possible to get Bryce Terang to potentially be the starting second baseman in the All-Star game in Philadelphia, on top of maybe being an MVP candidate. So that's really, really fun. So we took a little deep dive into the numbers, analyzing Bryce Terang. Let's take a less deep dive, so I guess a shallower dive on Jackson Churio. Let's go ahead and overreact to what I saw this week from him in St. Louis. Gosh, it's great to have him back in the lineup. We'll explain more after this on 620 WTMJ and ESPN Milwaukee.
It's Brewers Weekly on WTMJ. This is Brewers Weekly on WTMJ.
Let's go ahead and freak out about Jackson, because what we're seeing from Churio, and even going back to spring training, and we've talked about this before on this program, even during spring training, I couldn't find the audio for some reason. Maybe I already put it off my hard drive here, of Pat Murphy talking about Churio wants to be great. And he knows the next step for him being great is to take more pitches and to draw more walks. And he has always had a good feel for the strike zone. He just sometimes gets a little big, right? Like, think of how many times we see him do the nod and sort of get excited and get some swagger in it. Not quite a Soto shuffle, but, like, we got to come up with a name for, like, the Churio head nod and just, like, the action Jackson of just, yeah, I saw that pitch, and it's no big deal to me. Good pitch, no big deal. 6-for-9 start to the season. With three doubles and missing a homer by inches multiple times, hitting the ball hard at every turn. Like, that alone is great. Like, I'm not trying to take that away from what a great start it was for Jackson Churio this week in St. Louis, and just how different this lineup looks when he's in there and how much better it looks when Churio is available for this team. But just some numbers to kind of ring your bell here real quick of why we're already seeing a change, why I want to point this out after just two games from Churio. He saw 20 pitches out of the strike zone in these two games against St. Louis. He only swung at three of them. Now, he swung and missed twice, and one of them was a foul ball. Now, again, pitches out of the zone, you're generally not supposed to make contact with them, okay? But to see that patience, and if you want to rate it out based on his swings, remember, chase rate is divided by pitches outside of the zone, pitches you swing at, and that are outside of the zone. So out of the 20 pitches, he swung at three of them of the swings outside of the zone. So that's a 15% chase rate right now, which is super low. I mean, if he is a league average chase, like when we're talking about plate discipline with Jackson Chourio, if he is league average, because a season ago, he was not great at chase. Remember that five strikeout game at Yankee Stadium? How everyone was freaking out, and his chase rate was worse last year than it was in 2024 as a rookie. And he's now, again, one game, I should say 20% chase rate, 15% chase rate is what I said. That's what I write. But the thought of him being sub even just 25% chase rate, 6 points less than what it was last season. What's he doing with that other 6%? That's what we talk about all the time. Remember, we've talked about it with Willie Adames and trying to cut down on his strikeouts while he was here, and he did, and he had 30 homer seasons, right? Can Chourio be a 30 homer season despite missing the first month of the year? That's going to be hard to do. But if we're talking about that, then we're talking about maybe an MVP candidate there as well. But it all starts with discipline for Chourio. And it comes to working counts and understanding to get his pitch. He did not miss a single fastball in these two games. Again, I'll say that again. He did not swing and miss at a single fastball in these two games against St. Louis. He fouled one off that was out of the zone. Didn't chase anything out of the zone. Didn't chase anything upstairs that he shouldn't have been messing with or anything like that. If Chourio is on time for fastballs, and mind you, dead center field and right center field tells you he's on time for fastballs. Ooh, boy, because he's always had natural pop straightaway center. He has pull side pop. But again, similar to Bryce, where you can tell he's really going when he's hitting it to the opposite field. And the last ball he hit in that game on Wednesday off the top of the wall in front of the Cardinals bullpen in right field, he thought he got it. And he's starting to get probably a little frustrated that he hasn't got one out yet, but the pop that he showed there, 109 off the bat, whippy hands, no ill effects from the finger or anything like that. Man, he's a show pony, man. He turns it on when he wants to. He's super exciting. The other stat I wanted to point out, first pitch swing, 10 plate appearances. He only swung at the first pitch twice. Now, part of that has to do with the pitches he got, but it's clear he's going up there with a plan. It's clear he has found clarity in what he is trying to do in the at-bats. Now, this could all be for naught if he has an 0-for-15 weekend against the Yankees, and you'd be like, Dom, what the heck are you talking about? He's being more patient. Well, he swung at the first pitch 43% of the time last year, so roughly almost half, where you had a 50-50 shot almost of saying, he's going to swing at this pitch, let me throw a slider, right? And that's where the chase rate really balloons, and you get behind 0-1, and it's a whole different count for any batter. You talk to anybody about that. But if he's going to be that patient, if he's down to a 20% first pitch swing rate, we're going to monitor that. Let's see what this is after 75 plate appearances. And I know that's not a very large sample size, but it will show you a concerted effort that if Chourio's first 75 plate appearances feature a 25% first pitch strike rate or first pitch swing rate, then that's an actual effort to say, I need to be more patient. I need the pitcher to work harder to get me out. And to be fair, and we'll talk about this in the lineup segment coming up in a moment, I just feel like this lineup is better suited to fit around him and have him be the focal point, because when you have an MVP caliber Contreras, an MVP caliber Terang, when Yelich is healthy and Yelich is clicking, he looks unstoppable at times. Vaughn hitting a home run on Wednesday was a welcome sight. He can certainly put bat to ball. That the middle of this order, like we've been saying all this time, is super dangerous. I still believe in this team's offensive output. I know they're super low in the home runs right now, again, because of personnel. It should only get better. If the Brewers can finish in the middle of the pack when it comes to total homers, they'll be near the top in doubles, which was the opposite of what they were last year. They still slugged, quote-unquote, but it was most of their OPS numbers were really on-base percentage influenced and how strong they were with runners on base. And that's still true so far to this season. But for Chourio to be your two or your three hitter, which we'll talk about in the next segment, man, I mean, I don't want to face him with runners in scoring position. I don't want to face him when there are men aboard and what could happen with his power, with his opposite field ability, with his bat to ball. If that chase rate is down as it looks like it could be, if that whiff rate is lower than what it looks like it could be, I mean, that's another quantum leap that we're talking about here. Because we're talking about a guy in his career, mind you, those first couple months as a rookie with bad numbers with runners in scoring position. For his career, he's hitting .283 with runners in scoring position. And a season ago, he only hit .262, but he did hit seven doubles and six homers. For Churio, I think what he wants to see happen to his runners in scoring position numbers this season is to readjust his strikeout and walk rate in these situations. Meet the game halfway, as Pat Murphy says. Last year, he had eight walks and 23 strikeouts in his 123 plate appearances with runners in scoring position. Now, striking out 20% of the time in a runner in scoring position situation is very, very good. I'm not complaining about that at all. And if Churio's walk numbers are going to go up, naturally, the strikeout numbers should fall as well. That's going to be another thing I want to monitor after 75 plate appearances in the regular season. See how many runners in scoring position plate appearances he gets during that time. But I'm just overreacting. Again, I am openly overreacting. I want you to understand, I'm not saying take this to the bank or anything like that. That I'm already seeing something different from Jackson Churio. And his plate discipline this weekend against the Yankees will be super important because the Brewers are facing the brunt of that rotation. And we'll use the final segment to do the lineup thing I wanted to do, and we'll talk about the Yankees. So sit tight. Let's talk about Brew Crew and Yankees revenge for the torpedo bats from a season ago. We'll explain more on the other side of the break on your home of the Brewers, 620 WTMJ and ESPN Milwaukee.
This is Brewers Weekly on WTMJ. Brewers Weekly on WTMJ.
Let's split up this final segment with a little game I want to play, just kind of a thinking exercise talking about the lineup right now. And then we'll preview Yankees Brewers this weekend in these final 10 minutes of the show. This exercise I want to do is just meant to be an open forum bulletin board of trying to think like Pat Murphy, trying to think like the front office of what the Brewers' best foot forward is. Because, quite frankly, you have to see it this weekend against the best team in the American League in the Yankees. And the Brewers are going to get both sides of it. You're going to see a tough lefty in Max Fried on Friday. You're going to see, I mean, one of the surprises of the season, Cam Schlittler. Yes, that's how you say his name. Schlittler, emphasis on the L's, so you don't get canceled. And then another lefty in Carlos Rodon coming off the injured list likely on Sunday. So, you know, crafty lefty who cuts it, who sinks it, who makes you uncomfortable, a power righty, and then a power lefty who has a wipeout slider. You're going to see all facets of what you want to do. So I've got this game, and I want you to think along with me. Not meant to be numbers-based, but just sort of gut feel here of what you would want to do, stereotypical tools and that sort of thing. So against a left-handed pitcher, let's go ahead and start with that since the Brewers are going to see two lefties this weekend. I think Churio is going to be going straight up to the leadoff spot. I really do. I think, welcome back to Milwaukee. Here's Max Fried back at your home ballpark. Churio is going to lead off for them. You know, to think that Brandon Lockridge was leading off against Tarek Skubal two weeks ago, and this is not a drive-by on Lockridge because he's in my lineup. It's just a reminder of how down the Brewers were in that game against Detroit, and they still got to Skubal in that game too. But let me just read what I just gut feeling here might be the best lineup against lefties the Brewers are currently constructed with until Yelich comes back. Churio leading off and playing center field. Batting second, Bryce Terang at second base. Batting third, William Contreras, he is behind the plate. Batting cleanup, Gary Sanchez, he will be my DH, which we'll present another topic for a little bit later. Batting fifth, Andrew Vaughn, he's over at first. Sixth will be the aforementioned Brandon Lockridge, he's playing left field. Batting seventh will be Luis Renjifo, switch hitter, he's playing third base. I got Frelick batting eighth and playing right, and Joey Ortiz getting the start at shortstop and batting ninth for the Crew. That is my gut feeling of what the Brewers are going to roll out there against Max Fried this week. And on the Gary Contreras front, I think it's kind of fascinating that teams are always scared to play their backup catcher in the same lineup as their regular catcher in case something happens to one of them, right? You get a foul ball off the foot and the guy has to come out of the game or whatever, and now you lose your DH if, let's say, if you know, heaven forbid, if Contreras has something that he has to be pulled out of the game, Gary goes in to catch, you lose your DH, your pitcher has to hit, you have to do double switches like it's the old NL game. Or vice versa, if your DH comes out of the game, now your safety net of your backup catcher's out. So I wonder, man, what if you brought up Caro again? What if you carried three catchers contrary to popular belief? The reason I bring this up is because when Yelich comes back, you are going to have a surplus of corners, meaning you have Bowers who can play left, Yelich who can play left, Churio who can play left, and let's go ahead and keep Lockridge on the roster for the time being, and Tyler Black can play left, but I imagine he would be the guy that gets optioned because he's left-handed when Yelich goes down. My tinfoil hat theory is, what if they brought up Jett Williams? Because he can play the outfield too, and he's another right-handed hitter. He can play third, he can play short, he can play second, he can play center. That makes it a little bit easier to swallow carrying three catchers on your team. I just think that that's something that the Brewers should be considering. I don't know if they want to do it for the sake of Caro's development, given they want him to be catching as much as possible. He will not get that chance on the big league roster, which I understand why they haven't done it. So now, we'll switch over to the right-handed pitchers now, which may be the lineup that maybe we'd see on Saturday against Cam Schlittler. I've got Mitchell back in a leadoff spot. I know he strikes out a lot, but he draws a lot of walks. He can hit for power. He can steal a bag. He has great plate discipline. He sees over five pitches per plate appearance. He's a stereotypical leadoff man that he sees a lot of pitches. So I know Garrett strikes out a lot, but still, I think he's a valuable leadoff hitter because of the multiple tools that he can show off when he's able to steal a bag, when he's able to give you a double. He's even able to leave the yard. I know he hasn't left a yard of the month. Would like to see that sooner as opposed to later for Garrett, but it will happen at some point moving forward. Churio hitting second, I think that's kind of a no-brainer. Nowadays, you kind of want your best hitter hitting second, and Churio looks like that. I've got him in left field. Then I've got Terang hitting third. Traditional thinking here again, maybe old-school thinking, but Terang keeping that left-right going here for the Brewers, playing second base. Contreras in the cleanup spot, he will be my catcher. Bowers batting fifth because of that reverse leadoff. We've talked about the theory the Brewers subscribe to where your fifth hitter hits with the bases empty more as much as your one hitter does. So Bowers restarting the rallies being at first base. Andrew Vaughn hits second as the designated hitter with the theory of, well, if Bowers is on base, he would like to have some damage with Vaughn if he's going to hit a double or a homer. Frelick hitting seventh in right field. Renjifo hitting eighth as a switch hitter can try to avoid and break up the lefties because you're going to have back-to-back lefties with Hamilton batting ninth and Garrett Mitchell back at the top of the spot. So I got Hamilton as my shortstop. And I know what you're thinking, Dom. Hamilton's struggling defensively, and you're right. And he would be the first one to agree with you on that. But with what the Brewers are going through right now with their left side of the infield, until we see Cooper Pratt or Jett Williams in the big league roster, whatever the Brewers ultimately decide to make that move, you have to go with whatever percentage available to you that you can get between Joey and Hamilton. And for David, the threat of a bunt changes the defense. His ability to steal a bag changes the entire complexion of an inning. His bunt ability, if there are runners aboard ahead of him, that's certainly helpful. And for Joey, you're trying to set him up in any way possible to give him an advantage right now. He hits lefties decently well. He's falling behind in the way too many 0-2 counts. And I think Joey becomes a defensive replacement, obviously, in these games against right-handed pitching. But at some point, the Brewers are going to be faced with a day of reckoning where I hope it gets better before it gets worse. But between David Hamilton and Joey Ortiz and Cooper Pratt has been playing well down in AAA, I still have been banging on the drum for Jett Williams. I think he's talented and he's shown signs that he's ready. I mean, at this point last year, Caleb Derwin was up and they had pulled the plug on Oliver Dunn and Vinny Capra. Now, granted, even worse performances really brought that forward for the Brewers at that time. I really wonder how much longer this is going to go for the Brewers with the way things are going on the left side of the infield right now. So that's my little lineup exercise I wanted to go over with real quick before we talk about the Yankees and get ready to say goodnight. Because the Yankees, man, I still get people asking me about the torpedo bat thing last year and the opening series from hell and, you know, Nestor Cortez giving up homers on three consecutive pitches, and everything about it was just so shell-shocked where it was just like, whoa. But everyone knew that was such an anomaly. It wasn't anything you could put too much stock into. And let's also be very clear about another thing. The Yankees are clearly the best team in the American League, and it's not even close. I don't think anyone is surprised that the Yankees are good. I think everyone's sort of surprised that the Yankees doubled down on their run it back campaign, where, yes, they did not get out of the DS last year against the Blue Jays, but they felt they were close enough to, quote-unquote, run it back with virtually the same group that they had from a season ago. So kudos to them for having that foresight to do so. They made some key trades, adding Ryan Weathers, adding some help in their bullpen. And now they've got some decisions to make on the roster. Jason Dominguez is going on the injured list this weekend against the Brewers because he's got an AC joint sprain, you know, collarbone area. So he's going to be out for the weekend, the Martian, and they're going to call up the big league debut of Spencer Jones. So congratulations to Spencer Jones. If you don't know anything about Spencer, he's been compared to as the minor league Joey Gallo. He can hit the ball a mile. He can also strike out with the best of them. He has a strikeout rate north of 30%. He has been some graded by 80 raw power, but also by some a 20 hit tool, literally the 20-80 scale, the extremes. But we will see him this weekend, it looks like, against the Brewers. We are waiting to see if Ben Rice will be available this weekend. He had been dealing with a bruise in his glove hand on a pickoff throw from Max Fried earlier this week. He had not played in the last four games. And mind you, Ben Rice has been just as good of a hitter as Aaron Judge. I know Judge leads in homers, but Ben Rice, his WRC plus is over 200 right now, meaning he's double league average, which is bonkers. So we'll see if he's in there. I imagine he's probably going to be in there, given we haven't heard anything to the contrary. When we talk about the offense of the Yankees, of course, it begins and ends with Aaron Judge. But it's not just him. Cody Bellinger's been the hottest hitter on the planet the last week or so. Jose Caballero has been an important piece for them, so much so that they optioned Anthony Volpe when he came back from his shoulder surgery. In the bullpen, David Bednar has the closer role locked down. He's been great for them. Fernando Cruz is an eighth inning guy. All of his energy has been fun to watch, but this is a tough test. But you can find out where you're at. Thank goodness the reinforcements arrived when they did arrive for the Brewers. That is going to do it for this episode of Brewers Weekly. Thank you so much for watching. This is actually like my second podcast of the day, so it's been a day. We went to the dentist today, but it's all good. What an off day, busy off day, but thank you so much for listening. Again, Brewers All Access is the name of the podcast. If you want to tell your friends, if you want to hang out, listen, and enjoy some Brewers talk this weekend, we'll be with you after every single game. I'm Dominic Catronio. We'll talk to you after the games this weekend. Until then, keep on swimming.